Welcome to the Star News Spotlight. I'm your host, Nish Wyseth, and it's great to be back with you again after a couple of weeks off. It's Thursday, April 3rd. Let's start with the headlines. A landslide south of Tamarack Mill has shut down U.S. Highway 95 for at least a month, forcing a long detour that's impacting workers, emergency responders, and patients across Valley and Adams counties. Crews are rebuilding a 200-foot section of road, with completion expected by late April or early May. With no vehicle detour available, commuters from Council are facing 200-mile round trips. To ease the burden, local employers, including Tamarack Mill, Brundage Mountain Resort, and the City of McCall, are providing housing, per diem pay, and travel stipends to affected staff. A short stretch of the Weezer River Trail is open as a pedestrian bypass. EMS and law enforcement agencies have adjusted coverage areas and patient transport routes. Ambulances from Council are now rerouting to Weezer or Fruitland, and St. Luke's McCall is housing 16 displaced employees to keep services running. Home care and hospice patients south of the slide are being served from Boise. ITD recommends using Idaho 55 for vehicle travel and says the trail detour is for foot traffic and emergency use only. We'll keep you updated. And in St. Luke's news, a bright purple Barney box has been installed at St. Luke's McCall, offering free doses of naloxone, which is a nasal spray that can reverse opioid overdoses. This initiative is part of a statewide effort by Central District Health to make overdose response tools more accessible to the public. It's funded by opioid settlement dollars, and the kits can be picked up anonymously with no questions asked. Additional boxes are also located throughout Valley County, including in Cascade, Donnelly, and McCall. And in some election news, Valley County voters will weigh in on several key issues during the May 20th election, including a 10-year renewal and 1% increase of McCall's local option tax or lot tax on short-term lodging. The added funds, estimated at $300,000 annually, would go toward infrastructure projects like street maintenance. Voters will also decide on a $7 million sewer bond and fill open seats on multiple local boards, including Cascade Medical Center and the Payette Lake Sewer District. Some races are contested, while others will be filled by appointment due to no candidate filings. Well, it is burn season here in Valley County. Spring prescribed burns are underway across the Payette and Boise National Forest to reduce wildfire risk by thinning vegetation and encouraging fire-resilient tree species. Burns are planned near Cascade, McCall, Yellow Pine, Council, and Weezer, and will be conducted only under favorable weather and air quality conditions. While some smoke will be visible for a few days after each burn, officials say it's a small price to pay for preventing large-scale wildfires. Trailheads and access roads will be clearly marked to keep the public informed and safe. And in some more fire news, after over 20 years of service, McCall Fire Chief Garrett DeYoung is stepping down. A McCall native, DeYoung has spent his career responding to emergencies in his own hometown, an emotionally taxing job that he says has a shelf life. He plans to retire when his contract ends in August and pursue a master's degree in counseling to support mental health among first responders. DeYoung, who helped establish the Valley Countywide EMS District, said he's proud of his legacy and feels confident the next generation will carry the torch forward. Thank you so much, Chief, for all of your years of service to our community. And in some more healthcare news, St. Luke's McCall physician Dr. Caitlin Gustafson has been named the 2025 Family Physician of the Year by the Idaho Academy of Family Physicians. Gustafson, who has practiced rural family medicine in McCall since 2006, is also a vocal advocate for reproductive rights and women in medicine. She serves as president of the Idaho Coalition for Safe Healthcare Foundation and will be honored at a ceremony in May. Colleagues praise her as both a medical leader and a compassionate caregiver. Congrats, Gus. We're so proud of you. And in library news, the McCall Library's Children's Discovery Garden is officially underway after the City Council selected Laidlaw Design Company to lead the project. Funded by the McCall Library Foundation, the garden will include native plantings, educational displays, and nature-inspired play features like a large trillium sculpture. Designed by McCall natives Jamie and Erica Laidlaw, the garden emphasizes pollination, exploration, and hands-on learning. Construction is expected to wrap up just in time for summer in 2026. For today's deep dive, we're joined by Heather Lewis and Dr. Katie Camerata, two healthcare professionals based here in Valley County, who use their voices and experience to strengthen civic life here in our community. Heather, a physician assistant and former combat medic with the Idaho National Guard, who deployed on multiple missions, and Katie, a physician deeply committed to serving rural communities, have recently co-founded a new community organization called For the People. For the People is dedicated to promoting democratic values right here in Idaho. The group believes in things like government accountability, fair elections, but also civic engagement and the fundamental right of every citizen to participate in our democratic process. Through education, advocacy, and grassroots organizing, they aim to empower our community here in Valley County to stay informed, to vote, and to be able to take meaningful action on things that you care about. In our conversation, Heather and Katie share what inspired them to start this work, the values that drive their mission, and how we can all play a role in protecting and strengthening democracy right here at home. Here's my interview with Heather Lewis and Dr. Katie Camerata. Thank you guys so much for being on the show. It's good to have you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about For the People. What is this? How did it start? What inspired you to start it? All of those sorts of things. Give us some background about what this is.
Yeah, I'll read our mission statement to you. At For the People, we are committed to protecting and strengthening democratic values in Idaho. We believe in government accountability, fair elections, civic engagement, and the fundamental rights of all citizens to participate in the democratic process. Through education, advocacy, and grassroots organizing, we empower our community to stay informed, vote, and take action to ensure that our government reflects the will of the people. In the face of challenges to democracy, we stand united in promoting transparency, inclusivity, and the principles of freedom and justice for all. Together, we work to build a resilient, engaged, and informed electorate because democracy thrives when citizens are active, aware, and unafraid to use their voices.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And Katie and I come from different backgrounds in terms of how we grew up. And my background is that I served in the military as a combat medic and am a combat veteran of Operation Iraqi Freedom 3.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you. In 04 and 05. And kind of witnessing what was taking place in this country with regard to some big high-level changes was making this country sort of reflect more the countries in which I served, where there's only one thought process that is thought to be valuable. Women have no rights. If you are anybody who's different, LGBTQ plus, you have no ability to just exist as who you are. And so this country and the way that it's shaping really concerns me with regard to democracy being at stake. And Katie and I have, with this group, tried to focus on where we can make the most impact. And decidedly, that's with our local representatives, with our leaders in Idaho. It's a bigger drop in the bucket to talk to those representatives, try to get them to see how the decisions that they're making are affecting their constituents and maybe shape their voting behavior.
Was there something that you guys experienced or saw specifically that made you think, oh, something like this, this kind of conversational-based approach is needed in this community in particular, here in McCall or in the broader Valley County?
Yeah. So I think after the election, I feel like there were a lot of friends and community members in the area that were sort of just, you know, individually reaching out to each other, including, you know, ourselves, and just really feeling very helpless in that moment. And so thinking, you know, well, we both work in healthcare, and, you know, my background is that I watched my father serve a very small community similar mm-hmm. to the Valley County communities mm-hmm. in that he was a doctor there, and he tried to help the entire community as a whole. That was his goal.
Yeah.
That's always been my goal as well. And so feeling like, well, we are helping in healthcare by seeing individual patients, but is there something more that we could be doing to be affecting the community as a whole?
Yeah.
And so that was where we thought, well, we should sort of step up in this community. We are leaders in our own way, and can we be better at being a leader in that way by having an organization where we can gather people together? And I think, you know, Valley County is a unique place. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's rural. And so inherently there's just less people, there's less diversity. And so it can be really challenging to mm-hmm. find people with similar perspectives. And so by organizing or making that something that, you know, we are actively doing and gathering people together, you can sort of bring in other people who are, oh, okay. And otherwise, I may not have done this. I may have stuck to myself and, you know, continued to watch things on TV or on the internet, whereas we wanted to gather people together and like, let's have real conversations and talk about this.
Yeah, that's fantastic. What are some of the things that you hope participants in this group would gain from being a part of it? And what are maybe some long-term goals or dreams that you guys have for how this would play out over the long term here in Valley County?
One of the bigger things that I always think of is connection.
Yeah.
So everybody brings different perspectives and different experiences from their mm-hmm. backgrounds, and bringing those people together and having similarities and connections is just, I think, invaluable. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of my long-term goals is, what is there in the community that each of us are unaware of that mm-hmm. we can bring together and now be aware of and make connections?
Yeah, that's fantastic.
And I would say for me, it's to give people the confidence to take part in the democratic process.
Yep.
To not be intimidated mm-hmm. by their leadership in terms of voicing their opinion, letting them know when they have done something that will hurt their mm-hmm. constituents, and being less intimidated by it all, because it can be intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked, I think a while ago about, kind of getting democratically lazy at points, mm. which all of us are entitled to do. You know, if we feel like things are going our way, when we don't feel like they're going our way, it's our job to speak up and to tell our representatives that we don't think that what they're doing is good leadership, advocacy mm. for the citizens that they're representing, et cetera. Mm. And so it's just to make things very accessible to anybody who wants to participate mm-hmm. in any way that they want to. Mm. And so if for one person that might be writing to their representative for the first time ever in their life, then they are 100% more politically active in the democratic process than they were last year.
Yeah.
And so each one of those little drops in the bucket, those grains of sand, can force, you know, the wheels that are grinding in the state house with mm-hmm. legislation that is not helpful for most Idahoans to come to a screeching halt if it needs to. Yeah. But it's going to take all of us participating in that democratic process.
Yeah. It's a helpful reminder to people to think about the fact that, like, they work for you, actually.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. They work for you, not the other way around.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really helpful. So we can talk a lot about, you know, things like community and conversations and finding common ground, but I'd love to ask you guys about maybe some specifics, like how does this group actually function? When do you meet? What are the things that you talk about? How does this actually work? What does that look like?
So currently, we're still pretty new, but currently we are having monthly meetings.
Mm-hmm.
We were meeting at our homes, but we're going to start meeting in public areas now. Mm-hmm. And we then sort of have some actionable items where we talk about what was done over the last month and mm-hmm. what we're going to set forward for our future actionable items. We have some subtopics. And so currently there are a few people who are consistently joining the meetings, and we sort of each have a role in different areas. So mm-hmm. that's, you know, including topics like immigration, women's health, healthcare in general, LGBTQ plus community, public mm-hmm. lands, education, mm-hmm. et cetera.
Yeah.
So those are some of the things that we're starting to plan. And like I said, we're pretty new. And mm-hmm. so we plan to have other thoughts and processes in place once more people get involved. Of course, all ideas are welcome at this point.
Yeah.
And there's basically no membership at this point.
Yeah, just so, show up.
Yeah, show up. You don't have to come to every meeting. You can if you want to. We would love that. There's no fee, nothing like that. It's like everybody's welcome.
And no membership cards. Or
no, yeah. At this point, I mean, we'll see where it goes.
Sure. But, yeah. So some of these topics, right, they can be pretty hot button. They can be tough to navigate, especially in a larger group of people. You know, how are there any ground rules or shared values that kind of help guide people in how they engage with each other when they meet together, when you guys gather? How does that work?
Mutual respect, for sure. You know, there is, if there's differing opinions, you know, the two things that come to my mind are, is what this person is saying humane, and is it based in reality? And so those two things, I think bar none, sort of have to be the level playing field for anybody that is, you know, offering a counter argument for what we're speaking about. And that kind of debate is healthy, or can be,
sure,
but only if that baseline structure is in place.
Yeah. That makes total sense. I help teach media literacy at the high school. And we talk about how, you know, you can't find common ground and you can't find compromise. You can't solve some of these big problems unless you both have a mutually agreed upon set of facts, mm-hmm. which is why the facts matter, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
We can't solve something like climate change if one side says climate change is a hoax, right? You can't come to any sort of conclusion or even compromise on how the best way forward is. So it seems like humanity one, grounded in reality, those would be pretty pivotal.
Pretty basic. Yeah.
Pretty basic.
Yeah. And,
you know, finding common ground, or even just, you know, having a civil debate, having a, you know, reasonable conversation around different perspectives, because we all come to the table with some of these.
And it's easier to do in like a three-dimensional setting,
exactly,
sitting across from someone, than it is on the internet somewhere.
Yeah, don't do that on Facebook.
Is what no, yeah. I mean, it's if you want to, you can, but I mean, it's just not as helpful.
Right.
And so having somebody that's in your space and talking to you human to human kind of makes it a lot easier for that mutual respect to already be present.
Yeah, super, super important. What role do you guys think listening and storytelling play in finding that common ground? We kind of touched on it just a little bit there, but I'd love to expand on that a little.
Yeah, so we think it's a very big deal. Like I said earlier, everybody comes from different experiences and different perspectives. And, you know, a lot of the time you have an idea about one of your values, but you have a very limited experience within that realm, whereas somebody else can come along and share their real life story. And it may be very different experience, but still speaks to the same value. And I think that's an area where, you know, a lot of bridging can happen between two differences in opinion of, well, this is my reality, this is my reality. And, you know, storytelling historically is always eye-opening, right?
Sure.
And emotion triggering. And I think those are all really valuable opportunities for people to enlighten themselves and open their minds. And so that is very important for us to bring people together on those levels.
Yeah.
I also think it's important to kind of draw from your own individual experience as you write to your legislators.
That's right.
So for instance, recently, a bill was proposed that would have made mifepristone and misoprostol class two classified as narcotic medications. And those are medications that are routinely used to help with postpartum bleeding, meaning that could kill someone if they have limited access to it. And so when I wrote to Faye Thompson, who was on the Health and Human Services Committee, I told her about an experience that I had as a PA student years ago. I was working in an emergency room and we had a 14-year-old show up who had no pulse, wasn't breathing. And ultimately, that was my first code blue, so to speak. And it later we found out that she had found out she was pregnant about a week prior, was diagnosed with a urinary tract infection. Her parents never picked up the $4 prescription to treat this, and she died of sepsis. And she had no voice. She had no voice to advocate for herself. That falls on us as providers and community members. And for Faye Thompson or any of our representatives to put forth a bill like this that would limit accessing life-saving care puts them in the same position as those parents whose 14-year-old died. They are withholding treatment for somebody that would benefit from a medication. And that's not okay. So you can, and each of us has different experiences, but trying to make it personal when I'm talking to my representatives helps me to get across what I think we're dealing with and how this is not solving a problem for Idahoans. This is ridiculous legislation that just needs to go in the dumpster. And so the more voices we have telling their own personal stories with regard to how the policy that they're coming up with at the state house will affect them personally, hopefully makes them think twice.
Yeah. And it provides context that they may not otherwise have. Like, right? I mean, we don't have a lot of legislators down there that are physicians that would know the medical background and understand the nuances of some of this stuff. And so it would be important for you, you know, as a medical provider to be able to give that context and be like, here's actually what this means. And here's how this plays out and how I have seen it play out, which helps them understand something that maybe they wouldn't otherwise understand because they're not a medical practitioner. So yeah, I can see how that would be helpful. So what gives you hope that this kind of dialogue and talking amongst each other can make a difference, especially, well, I mean, let's call it what it is, right? It's a time of very, very deep polarization. But there are things that we can find common ground on. There are things that we can come around together that aren't necessarily partisan, like democracy. That is not a partisan issue. That
no,
is something
yeah.
that we all participate in and are all invested in. So how does something like this give you hope that this would make a difference?
So I found a lot in my experience in healthcare that when you help people work through a question that they have with education, you can see the connections being made in their brain. And so we hope that part of what we do is just education, right? So one of the things that we want to do is have a social media presence in meeting people where they're at and providing a series on Did You Know? You know, so we have a variety of topics that we want to cover, but did you know this? Did you know this? And, you know, like I said, in my perspective in healthcare, if people say some idea, some overarching theme like, oh, well, we should ban those abortion drugs. And then you say, did you know?
Yeah.
Did you know? Yeah. That you can see them and, you know, they'll go, oh, wow. And it's like this light bulb happens. And so that gives me hope in seeing it in my own practice, mm-hmm. and that we can reach further in the community and provide more education in those areas, and that people can, oh, I did not know that. Mm-hmm. And they can start to make more informed decisions and actions mm-hmm. based on that.
Mm-hmm. That's great. What about you?
I think a lot of what you see in terms of polarizing messaging, mm-hmm. whether it's from the far left or from the far right, it's designed to create an emotional response.
Yep.
And so that if you take that emotional response away mm-hmm. and just offer basic facts, then that sort of takes the emotional argument mm-hmm. away from either of the extremes. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we want to find common ground with our messaging, and in particular on social media, is not going to be to stoke a response mm-hmm. that creates hate or fear, mm-hmm. but one that informs. And so the more informed we are collectively about how the democratic process works, mm-hmm. how we can access it, and have a ground game in Valley County that involves just ordinary citizens getting together and having three-dimensional conversations about it.
Yeah.
That's just one rung in the ladder toward making Idaho a much less extreme place yeah. to live.
Yeah, that's fantastic. This is a side question that I didn't include in the list, but I'm curious about it. So one of the big things that you guys have both mentioned is, you know, informing people, right? How do you foresee navigating the challenge of increasing distrust in places like the media or experts, right? We're seeing this kind of perpetual and nonstop attack on places of good and helpful information. Mm-hmm. That are fact checked, that run through a rigorous process to make sure that they're as accurate as they can be. How do you guys hope to maybe help navigate that for people? Any thoughts on that?
I think we've had to navigate it a little bit
as providers.
For sure, with vaccine hesitancy and with the COVID-19 pandemic. Sure. I've been a PA for 15 years, and I've never had as many patients talk to me with very strange ideas about the virus itself, what we're doing as medical providers. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult because if it had been an illness that caused disfigurement, people would be lining up down the streets and nobody would be skeptical.
Right.
It didn't. And people died alone in hospitals, a few of my patients.
Yeah.
And that was really disheartening and pretty depressing yeah. during that time as a healthcare provider. Getting past that, mm-hmm. I think it has made, I can say this for me personally, but it's made having those conversations a little easier because, you know, we do have facts on our side and we can lead people to a decision that we think is the most helpful for their health and their community. It's still up to them if they want sure. to do that. But it's been easier for me now to have those conversations than it was prior to the COVID pandemic.
Interesting.
I think that earning trust in people is a big part of this, which takes a lot of time. But,
yeah.
you know, in a small community, we actually have that on our side, right? We're able to build relationships, long-term relationships with people, with their children, with their grandparents, with everybody in their family. And I think that the longer that you build those relationships, the more trust you build with those people.
Yeah.
And I think that can have, you know, cascading results. And so that's one of my goals, is just to continue being there for both the individuals, the families, the community, and trying to build that trust.
Yeah, that's a great point. That relational capital, you know, when you have that in the bank, and then you need to have a hard conversation, or you want to broach a topic that's more difficult or touchy.
Yeah.
You know, there's an assumption of goodwill because you have that relational trust with one another to know that, like, oh, I know you're not going to attack me for what I think about this thing, or I can assume that you actually do want the best for me because I've seen you show up when my parent died, or I've seen you show up when my kid was sick, or whatever that looks like. So you have that mutual kind of relationship. That's a great point.
Absolutely. That's one of the things that my father did in his community is he was there for 30 years, and the people in that community knew him so well, trusted him so much, even if they had politically very different views, they still respected him as their provider and his expertise. And so I think that's something that I learned from him that I will try to implement as well.
Mm-hmm. And it's to your point, right? It's helpful to live in a small community. Like, you can't, I mean, I suppose we can lash out at each other and, you know, call each other liars and names or whatever, but then you're going to see him in the you're going to see him at Ridley's.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you can say that thing on Facebook. That is a thing available to you. Is it wise? Question mark.
Right.
So yeah, we have to live in community with one another and, you know, continue to, you know, live amongst each other and what's best for one another. So I love that. How can people in the broader community support or get involved with what you're doing? What's kind of the entry point for you guys?
Just showing up for a meeting, I think.
We've
got our next meeting April 8th at 6:30 p.m. at the Donley Civic Center / Community Center there. Okay. And just show up and participate.
Yeah.
We've got a different agenda each month.
Okay.
We don't hold anybody to having to show up every single month or pay dues or anything like that. It's really just meant to be available for anybody and everybody who wants to be involved in the democratic process and take action with actionable steps instead of just doom scrolling, which is not healthy. And past that, you know, if somebody wants to be more involved in terms of developing some of the social media stuff or inviting guest speakers or things like that, then by all means, we welcome that opportunity for people to bring their talents or the talents of people that they know in their community to come and chat with us about it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. If you were to imagine what success looks like for this group, how would you classify that? I know that's a big question, but curious.
I think success would look like a community of individuals who are now acting as a community rather than individuals.
Oh,
so it's very easy for us to stay isolated in our homes and doom scroll, right? Mm-hmm. but we're not meant to be. We're meant to be a community that we all bring different skills to the table and perspectives, and we're social beings. And so to connect people and make things happen is so much easier, so much more efficient than trying to make these things happen on your own. I think it really does bring a community. We need a community to make changes. And so that's, I think, what success would look like.
Yeah. Yeah. And to act like a community would be, you know, to be for one another's flourishing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, rising tide lifts all boats sort of a thing.
Yeah.
Right. You know, like it's better for me individually if my neighbor is fed, housed, clothed, educated, right? All of those.
Absolutely.
Things. Yeah. And
absolutely.
So coming together around those things and building community around that is huge.
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you guys so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it. I love what you're doing. How can we find you? Do you guys have, I know you're developing social media. Is there anything, any website? How can people know what's happening? Aside from subscribing to the Star News, which I'm sure this will be in there.
So Katie knows that I'm technologically challenged. So we're working on developing, a TikTok page, a Facebook page / Instagram. And so if you want to look for the people, then here in the coming days, we will certainly have some more social media presence. That's in particular one thing that we want to grow so that there's an avenue for anybody and everybody to access information about us.
Fantastic.
Maybe we'll just have a good old fashioned email too.
Oh yes.
That people could contact us on for those who don't have social media.
Yeah.
No, I love that. Right. I'm trying to stay off that stuff as much as I can. Well, thank you guys so much. It was such a joy to talk to you. Thanks for all of your work and what you're doing. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So is anyone else sick of the snow yet? I don't know about you, but I'm getting kind of tired of second and third and fourth winter, even though I'll never complain about the water. We know that we need it. Well, let's figure out if we've got something on the forecast. Let's take a look at the next week. As always, here's Todd Cook with the weather.
It's been another cold and snowy, rainy week here in the west central mountains of Idaho. The ski areas and mountains have picked up another foot plus of snow over the last 10 days or so, and McCall's even got in on the action with about 6 to 10 inches during that time frame. Looks like we're going to take a little bit of a break from the cold and wet conditions and start a warm-up this weekend and into next week. Highs are going to climb back into the upper 40s to the mid-50s, which is not too far from where we should be this time of year, which is roughly around 50 degrees. There is a chance of some rain and mountain snow on Monday night and through Tuesday as the system comes through. Right now, models are kind of mixed on how significant this will be. But either way, it'll be one and out, and then we're going to go back to dry and even warmer temperatures as we head into late next week. A little bit of a brief recap on March. We ended up with 4.27 inches of precipitation for the month, which is significantly higher than the average, which is about 2.6 inches. Now, that's liquid, which means rainfall and snow melt, if it were to melt into liquid. Snowfall, we had 23 inches, which is about 5 inches above average for McCall. And the outlook for April, right now, all the long-range models are showing not really a clear indication of either wet or dry, and temperatures kind of in the same ballpark. There's not really any indication on big warm-ups or big cool-downs at this point. It's not to say we can't have either of those. It's just the long-range models aren't showing any indications right now of that happening for the time frame. Snowpack, we're doing great. The mountains are back over 130% of average for our water, which is pretty impressive, about 48 inches of liquid equivalent in our snowpack right now, which is pretty awesome for this time of year. That's going to start dropping here in the next few weeks as we get the snow melt gets underway for the season, but we'll hit our peak around late April as far as the amount of water in our snowpack. And then from that point on, we start heading down and melting the snow, and it's going to be a little while this year, obviously, with a pretty deep snowpack in the mid to upper elevations. Well, that's it for now, and I will be here back next week. Talk to you then. And don't forget, McCall Weather on Facebook.
Due to spring break, we don't have any sports news to report from the high school, so let's just jump right into some local events happening here and around Valley County. The monthly gathering of Doing Democracy is coming up in a couple of weeks. You can join a community discussion on this month's topic, which is, what do we expect from our elected officials? It's happening on Tuesday, April 15th from 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Doing Democracy sponsors open public dialogues on issues facing our community. These discussions aim to foster a culture of civil discourse that allows multiple perspectives and creative conflict, leading to the discovery of everyday needs and common visions in a safe and stimulating environment.
The discussion will take place in the library's community room. For the People, a nonpartisan community group committed to protecting and strengthening democratic values in Idaho, will meet at 6:30 p.m. on Tuesday, April 8th at the Donnelly Community Center down in Donnelly. The group plans to promote government accountability, fair elections, civic engagement, and the fundamental right of all citizens to participate in the democratic process. You just heard about this in my interview with Heather and Katie. The group plans to work to build a resilient, engaged, and informed electorate because democracy thrives when citizens are active, aware, and unafraid to use their voices. The Donnelly Community Center is located at 169 Halfordy Street in Donnelly. Nordic trails will continue to be groomed at Bear Basin Nordic area through Sunday. Skiers are encouraged to get out, enjoy new snow, and put in their final ski miles of the season on trails through the weekend. You can find live updates regarding grooming status online at nordicpulse.com. You can search for Bear Basin Nordic Center. Quaker Hill Camp will host an all-you-can-eat pizza dinner on Wednesday evenings from 5 to 7 p.m. this month, starting on April 9th and running through April 30th. All of the proceeds from the pizza sales are going to go to support the fundraising efforts of three local McCall Donnelly track and field athletes who have been invited to join the Coast to Coast International Athletics Track and Field Meet this summer in Australia. The all-you-can-eat pizza buffet costs $10 for adults and $13 for kids ages 13 and older. Kids ages 5 to 12 eat for $8 each, and kids under 5 eat free. Dinner is hosted at Quaker Hill Camp Dining Hall, located at 1440 Warren Wagon Road here in McCall. And for more community events, make sure you check out the print edition of this week's Star News. And that is a wrap for this week's edition of the Star News Spotlight. As always, make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss out on an episode. And hey, we would really love it if you could do us a quick favor. Leave a rating or a review if you can, or just share it on social media, Facebook, Instagram, whatever works for you. If you have comments or suggestions for the podcast or any news tips or stories, please reach out to me at starnewspodcast@gmail.com. That's all one word, starnewspodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening. We're so glad that you joined us. Until next time, stay connected, stay curious, and stay tuned. I'll see you next week. The Star News Spotlight podcast is a Star News production. It's hosted and produced by me, Nish Wyseth, and it's recorded at and in partnership with the McCall Public Library. Max Silverson fact-checks the show, and stories are written by Max Silverson, Sierra Christie, Ben Fletcher, and me. Thanks again for joining us.